Oh, and where's, is Joey here?
Joey's
there. I missed him the other day.
Joey,
Joey's leaving today to Illinois.
No, he's going back to the...
Joey just came in.
I know he was trying to, is he there?
Yeah.
Can I speak to him?
Yeah.
Hi, Joey, how are you? How do I do this?
Good, how are you?
Good. I don't know if I stood you up the other day or you stood me up, but I was there later. But are you still around? Okay, so can we speak next week? Okay, if it's something more, whatever, just give me a call. Okay, bye-bye. I'll put it back on speaker. Are you there?
Yeah.
Okay. Ms. Shear, today, I mean, you know, just feel, you know, comfortable to jump in and ask your questions anytime you want.
Oh, thanks.
Okay. It doesn't have to be about Yetzias Mitzrayim. It's good. Okay. So, we did discuss Nikita Skaifetz. We'll discuss it a little bit more. Oh, actually, I brought my Mishpatei Shvuos here, my little one. I think I left it in the other room. Okay. So we'll get back to it. And I still want to speak a little more about tzitzes and tefillin and try to, I guess, reinforce the point that I made about what I think the common denominator is. But if we don't get to that today, maybe I'll just mention it very quickly. We'll add it on to something. A few add-ons are still required. Okay, so let's move on to the next topic, which is the question of the skybus. And again, this is a, you know, again, a drive-by, if you will, to a much, much bigger topic of the skybus. But at least to talk about these Gemaras and their, you know, potential implication. Okay. And then we'll talk maybe about Kol Lashon and Lashon HaKodesh. So, basically, this topic flows from the Sugya here, from the Shaka Vitaria. Moshe, you want to read it just quickly, the lines in the Gemara? What? The relevant part. Right? Actually, it's only one, you know. Yom Amar Eini Nishba? Well, I mean, the context, of course, is what? Right. After the Iyum, which we've discussed, might be connected to the Nikitas Chafetz, might be separate from the Nikitas Chafetz. That's one of our discussions. Right, so you have this iyun. Kol ha'olam kulo nizdazeh b'shach amar Kadosh Baruch Hu b'Sinai lo sisa Hashem Hashem alekach alashav. And why violating this particular iser is more chamor, right, with regard to all sorts of consequences than other isurim, right? And again, let's just add that, you know, whatever, whether it's the added iyun that you're ignoring, or, you know, which makes it particularly that if somebody says to you, somebody raises the stakes, right? They say, these are the consequences, you know, if you, and these are the implications, this is how I'm going to, the Rabboni Shalom basically says that to you, right? If you do this, you know, this is how I will take it, and you do it anyway. So obviously that adds to the merit component. You can't, you know, it's hard to hide behind the, let me say it this way. I think there are basically two elements to the chomer, or three elements of the chomer of shvua and violating it. Right. One is the what I'm saying right now, which is another question is whether it's not a little bit circular or not. It's once there is the association with this being, you know, kind of a litmus test. And you know how you conduct yourself in this context, you know, is a statement. So then I'd say it raises the stakes, and especially on the merid side of it, there's no longer any shelter, or at least the shelter from, you know, shogeg or self interest, tavoso, you know, unsoso, that kind of a thing. You know, becomes much less. That's one. And number two is the fact, especially if we take the view that the purpose of the Shvua to begin with is to add Biror or Namanus in a context where, you know, it's needed for the Din Torah. It's needed because Keskes Kashrus is wobblier or maybe, you know, more suspect than it is in other circumstances. So, again, separate from the Iyum part, but again, explaining the Iyum part, so it's no longer circular, the violation, right, becomes greater. And the third point, I think, is that if it's true that Shvua, especially B'Shem Hashem or B'Nikitas Chefetz, but Shvua in general, has some of the overlapping components and characteristics that we have been describing, namely that implicitly, you know, what you're saying is, you know, that my relationship to the Ribbono Shalom is online, you know, is the, you know, being set up as a consequence or an equivalent, you know, to what's happening, you know, here in the courtroom or in my being Nishbal HaSheker, or and the idea of, you know, Shvua B'Shem, Shemos Shel Hashem, all the different issues that makes Shavua, or again the idea of being cynical in, you know, invoking, you know, Shem Hashem, right, to lie, or the idea of ultimate compartmentalization, you know, when, you know, again your interests, you know, are not connected to your holistic connection, you know, to the Ribbono Shel Olam. Those are all overlapping things that we discussed in general in terms of the importance of Shavua. So those things, that's the third component, all of that contribute to the idea of Kol HaOlam Nizdazeah, as well as the added Chomer that we read about. Hu Mishvachto, there seems to be this connotation, maybe we'll get back to it, Lo Yinakeh, right, that this particular transgression or breach or violation, infraction, is something which doesn't come in a vacuum, and it also doesn't remain isolated. In other words, a person who, knowing or not knowing, you know, all of these implications, you know, is able to be nishba l'sheker, right? That comes from somewhere. That comes from, like, you know, a certain background, you know, in which there's insufficient, I guess, you know, education, you know, as to, you know, the implications of all of this, or you know, some of the categories that it tramples upon. Moreover, you know, it's a toxic thing, you know, that can't be contained. It's never narrow and compartmentalized. That's the whole point, is that you can't compartmentalize, and therefore it ends up spilling over into other aspects. So it's the Chomer HaDabar, per se, Shem Hashem, and all these things, as well as the implications, you know, in terms of where it comes from and what it infects as well. So that's how we understand, I think, the Din, Shekol Olam Kula Nizdazeya, B'Shashar Makadosh Baruch Hu, B'Sinai Lo Sisa, together with some of the explanations of how the violation here is more chabal. Okay, so that's what that's the background of what we've said, right? Halamarta dvarim shein eishu mayim bechalinoso shua sheker bechalosam. These are really very powerful words, and I think they need to be understood, right, in these various, or against the background of these various considerations. Okay, so that's that. So then comes, go ahead, im amar. Now, we can't blame him for saying any nijba after hearing all of this, or especially integrating, right, internalizing, like, all of these implications. He said, well, like, you know, I wouldn't say ma lanu l'tzara zos, because he, to quote the Mishnah in Sanhedrin, right, about Chofetz Haggadah, because, you know, he benefits tremendously with the Shvua by virtue of, you know, him being nijba v'niftar. But the point is, after hearing all of this, you know, he may just prefer to write a check, right? That wouldn't be so surprising. So imamar, go ahead, eini nishba. Yeah. So what does that mean? So here, this is a major debate, right? It's one line in the Gemara, and there is a major debate about. Okay, so what is the debate, Moshe? Yeah, so Rashi says what? Potron oso miyad, what does he say? Ein mashin oso? Yeah. So it's interesting that, you know, Rashi, on the one hand, admits that, you know, we want to rush the process, like, you know, capitalize on his, you know, his mood, you know, and his, you know, his momentary conviction that he doesn't want to do this. We want to capitalize on that, implying that if he had agreed to do it and he's still hanging around and hasn't left the Beis Din yet, right, then obviously he could be chozer, right? At the same time, Rashi says, Al korcho kishalim miyad, right, shekibel olav be-Beis Din. So the question is really, well, I'll get back to this in just a second, what to make of this. Now, Rashi clearly holds that there's some sort of real binding in Schaibus here, such that once he, you know, once he leaves Beis Din, you know, he can no longer be chozer, even though he didn't make a kinyan, right? And this is just, you know, an act of volition on his part. The question is it the fact that the case is closed that's koveya? Or, and therefore, you know, there's not, you know, you can't be chozer, you know, after the case, you know, has been dismissed, right? Or is it the hizkaibus, per se? Just that the hizkaibus isn't complete, let's say, until he's left Beis Din. That's not so clear in Rashi. But certainly Rashi is taking some sort of a stand, which is that legally something happens when he agrees to pay, right, rather than to be nishba v'nifta. Okay, and Bali Tosis, we can read the Tosis quickly. We'll read the other ones in a minute, but Pirshu Kuntris. I can say the truth is that Rashi doesn't really say kodem sheyetze mi-Beis Din, right? But, okay, that's how Tosis reads it. Yeah. V'hodam rinan. So what's that about?
So the guy says that I'm willing to pay.
What's the situation there?
Shomer.
You have a shomer. What's the ikra d'dina? I mean, is he chayv or potter? The ikra d'dina.
He's not chayv.
He could be nishba v'niftar in that case. So you could take a shuas shomer and go home. Right? And the question is, if he agrees, instead of, you know, to be niftar, he agrees to pay, right? So if the ganav is found, let's say it's a case of geneva, then the kefal goes to the shomer, rather than to the bailiff. And the question is, let's say he's kozer, he says, Areni mishalim, the chazav amar eini mishalim. The question is, mi amrina meheder kahadar bay. So it sounds like he could be chozer, right? So that too is a situation where he basically agrees to pay. It's comparable, seemingly comparable. We'll see in a second whether it's the same or not. I mean, our case is a situation where there's a nishba v'niftar case, and he says, I'll pay. There it's a situation also where there's a nishba v'niftar case, but there it's a shomrim situation, right? And it sounds like he has the ability to be chozer, even after he made the commitment. So it seems like a stira, whether it's a skybus, is defining or not. Okay. So Tosa says, Hainu. Okay, so Tosa's answer is technical one, right? And that's why, again, Rashi doesn't say, Shelo yakser kodem sheyetziv Beis Din. Although, again, it might be implicit. But Tosis added it in, I think, because he's setting it up, right? Tosis knows this question, troubled by it, right? So they, you know, are kind of just emphasizing already in Rashi, you know, Ad sheyetze mi-Beis. Now, again, it is implied in Rashi that there is something like that, ein mashino so kan, right? Shelo yachzer bo. As we said before, on the one hand, Rashi says, Yishalem miyad shukibal alav bebezdin. On the other hand, he implies that there is some tkufa in which the guy can be chozer. So Bali Tosas assume that that tkufa is, you know, leaving the venue of Bezdin, and therefore they have a ready hechatimtzi response, right, to neutralize what otherwise would be a stira between two gemaras about what happens if a guy's mischayev l'shalem, right, rather than being nishba. Okay. Inami. Or second possibility for Rashi. Now what? Yeah, because, and that of course a chiddush in the Knias HaKeifel, right? Knias HaKeifel belongs to the, again, we're not studying Hamafkid right now, but this is a very interesting question, right? He's Kone Keifel because it's Mishalim, right? Or because it's Mechui of Lishalim, but he becomes the Bailim, you know, in the Gneva case as a result of that decision, and that's an objective truth. So as long as he's Mishai of Lishalim, he is the Bailim Legabe Keifel, or no. Right, it's a really, really the kefel, you know, belongs al pidin to the owner, to the mafkid, right? And it's a schus that a special. It's a din Torah. It seems like we'll get to it in a second. It's a special schus, right? That the shomer, you know, can assume that status, right? But it's contingent upon. Right, this him not being a troublemaker. It's a schus. It's not a din. It's a schus, and that schus is contingent upon, you know, his attitude. Yerushalmi in a mafkid discusses the question, like, what will happen if a third party says Harini Mishali? Right, let's say, you know, you have these kind of hedge fund people. You know, they're always circling around. You know, so you know, we've talked a lot about distressed assets. You know. What's the you know, what's the market, you know, for Kefel and Geneva? It depends on how good the police department is, you know, and a lot of other things. But you know, maybe actuarially, right? It's not a bad you know, depending on all these things. Maybe it's a good deal, or maybe he's just like a wonderful guy, and he wants to make sure, you know, his chesed is, and he just wants to make sure that. You know, nignavs, you know, don't lose their karen. You know, so he's always, so that's his chesed, you know, he steps in. He wouldn't do it, you know, maybe, you know, if there wasn't a chance that he could double his money, but, or at least, you know, receive compensation. So maybe he actually does it just for the karen, you know, for the chance he'll get back the karen, but he mainly gets the kefal, or maybe he's a bit of an entrepreneur, right? He's a combination, you know, bal chesed and entrepreneur, right? I don't want to psychoanalyze this guy too much, but right, you understand what I'm saying. So in the end of the day, what would happen if this, you know, a third party just says, you know, like he's a shark, you know, well, I guess if he's a good guy, he's not a shark, so he's just like an amazing altruistic, you know, persona. So like he, this is what he does, you know, he neutralizes the distress from, you know, Karen loss. So what would happen if that third party says, I'll pay your Karen? You know, would he be, you know, able to acquire the Kefel? So the Rishalmi seems to say no. So this makes it a very interesting, we'll get back to this, but this makes it a very interesting issue. You know, the Shomer Shiny, we understand why the Shomer, it was taken from his possession. Right, so the Maisa Gneva was done Bershuso, even though he's an embassy. Right, how do we know that he's an embassy? From issues that we discussed this year. Yoni? He may have been only listening, so that's not really fair, I guess. But you listen, right? How do we know that the Shomer is an embassy? Where did it come up? And we know it anyway, so you're probably thinking, I know it from here, I know it from there, I know it from the next place, which one should I say? That's fine. But I mean, it's from something that we discussed extensively. Yitzi? I'm not going to ask Eitan because he wasn't here. Avi? Nady? How do we know that he's an embassy? What do I mean that he's an embassy? Asher? Yeah, exactly. For the whole sug of Harsha, right, where the Bali Tosis were very upfront on Lama Gimel and Beis and Baba Kama Ayin, and it's all over the, you know, the Bali Tosis all over Shas, and almost all Rishonim agree, you know, and that is that the din of Eina Breshuso, right, which prevents you from being a Makdish, right, according to almost all Rishonim, does not apply to a Pikado, because Pikado Kalecha Disa Breshuso Demara Isa. So, on the one hand, the chafetz was stolen from the, wherever it is, it was stolen from the Nignabs, or, you know, Nigzal, but because the Kefo, the Nignabs, embassy. That's what I mean by embassy. Meaning, it's 100 miles away, or a 1,000,000 miles away, right, in the Rishus of the, in the physical Rishus of the Shomer, but it's not considered Eina Breshuso. Because again, the exception to that is that the, again, with regard to Harsha, the Mordechai, Tafel spends every 2 days on the Hardai, right? And I think I mentioned that in the Ksos, and the other poskim, there's discussion about whether you should be chalik between different Shomrim or not. We'll talk about that. Meaning Shomrim Socher perhaps being different than Shomer Shimon and Shomer Sachar, because they have a certain bailus, you know, in terms of Ishtamshus. So maybe it's a little more in their Rishos as well. But all things being equal, the Pikadon is Rishos HaNignav legally. Does that mean, you know, it's again, the Gunav Mibes HaIsh Velo Mibes HaGanav, but if it's the Gunav, just take it that way, Mibes HaShomer, right, that's always Chayiv gets a case. That's the Hechatimsi that we're talking about now. That's always Chayiv Kefel, because that's not a competitive bailus, that's a complementary or even, you know, a subordinate bailus. He's holding the object for me. Right. So, on the one hand, you might say that a shomer is, you know, practically a third party. It wasn't stolen from his rishus, or no. I mean, legally, just because the nignav has embassy status, you know, and it's also birshuso, doesn't mean that the physical rishus, you know, and the control of that physical rishus, you know, isn't also a factor. So maybe it was stolen in some respects, you know, in a junior way from him as well. And even if not, the point is that because he has responsibilities to the Nignav, I mean to the, not a lumdishly correct way to say it, because he has responsibilities to the Mafkid, who's the same person, but Torah's Mafkid, so he's affected by, and the first thing we ask is, you know, was he a Poshea, you know, and so on. So, in some respects, right, in addition to the Rishus problem, you know, there's just an aspect of theft, you know, from him. Moreover, and we'll get back to this in just a couple of minutes, you know, the whole status of a Shomer in general may be that he's, you know, fundamentally Mechuyev. When a Shomer is Patur, you know, why is he Patur? Or is that like a Patur, or is it a lack of Chiyuv? We'll get back to this. But any odeim praticha, kind of, or any odeia, if there's an any odeia, is it any odeim praticha, or any odeim is chayavti? Is the default that he's chayav, or is the default that he's potter, or something in between, meaning the circumstances will dictate whether he's, you know, completely chayav or completely potter. But what I'm trying to say is that because of his initial responsibility and achrayus and so on and so forth, and that it was stolen from him, or whatever happened under his watch, etc. So a way to look at it is that I'm just, you know, A, it happened in his physical domain. B, he has responsibilities to the mafkid. And three is that this last point, and that is that legally every shomer, you know, may be default, you know, mechuyev. So from all points of view, when a shomer says hareini mishalem, right, that's very different than a third party, right, the entrepreneurial, you know, shark type or the altruistic type. It doesn't make a difference, right? He is not a third party, or no. So, but the Yerushalmi seems to say that, and pashtus of the din is that we don't have this halacha of somebody else. So if that's the case, So we can, you know, ask the question here. So what's really happening when this guy says, you know, Hareini Mishalim? Right. What kind of hiskaibus is that? Number one. We'll get back to this, the implications of this for that. But let's leave that aside for the moment and get to Tosis's second point. How do we get into this? Tosis says, according how will, what will Rashi do with the sugya b'metzia? Rashi here says that, you know, as soon as the guy, you know, passes on his option to be nidra of a niftar, that his chaibus is binding, and yet in b'metzia it seems like, you know, if we take him seriously, right, then you know, he loses his kefel option. In other words, he can be chozer from his chaibus. So the first answer of Tosis, as we just discussed, is that it depends. You know, toch bezdin, chutz the bezdin. And, you know, again, that's Lashitasov that he emphasizes that in Rashi here. But the second answer is a Chiddush, and that is that in Achanami he is Mechuyev, Hareini Mishalim. But just because he's Hareini Mishalim, does that alone generate, you know, his Skuz Kefel? Or is the Skuz Kefel something which always belongs to the Nignav, but is Nitan, right, to be transferred? But Betoras a transfer, right? Basically, the Shomer has the Schus Gevia on the Kefel of the Nignav. So all I'm saying is, the more we look at the Shomer, right, as somebody who, you know, is a party in all of this, you know, then it's easy for him to even to assume, right, the status of the Nignav, or some aspect of this, you know, without it necessarily being contingent upon whether he's giving him a hard time or a lesser time. Not as something extraneous, you know, but as something, you know, which is core. And then Tosis's suggestion, which is just annoying him, might be enough. It might be Noveya from the Shakam Tari of the Gemara itself in a Mafkid. But on the other hand, even if you were to take that position, namely, that he gets it agav the nignav and as a schus gvia, I still think we're not going to suggest that a third party, or that he is like a third party, and that a third party could accomplish the same thing. So all the three or so overlapping features, right, that make him singular, are still true. It just, the question is, does that make him potentially somebody who could assume fully, right, the Nignav status here, or the prime Chi of Kefel address status here, or is it limited to the Schus Gvia of what is still acknowledged as a Chi of to the real Bailim and to the real Rishus, or the also Rishus, namely the Nignav? Okay. But either way, this is a possibility. Let's continue. Yeah. Can I read in Hassan? That maybe this idea that a Truche Beidin is a factor. Go ahead. Yeah. Okay. Okay, Nira. So he likes Rashi. Okay. Tosis likes Rashi. Here. Okay. But look at Mishra Pirish Rabbeinu Tam B'Sefer for Yashar. Go ahead. Perek Zeborer. So what's Naman Alay Abba? That we certainly know, we've done a lot this year. Kiblolai. So in Kiblolai, what happens in Kiblolai? Rabbi Natan says, the Matzi Hadarbe. What, and what's the Rai from Mavgid? Because you can be Chozer. Because he interprets the Gemara in a Mavgid, right, that if he was Chozer, it would be effective. And it sounds like, according to Rabbeinu Tam, right, that's not just a din in Schia B'Kefel, right, and it's not just a din in Lo Yatza Mibezdin. So it sounds like even if Yatza Mibezdin, he could still be Chozer. So Tosis in Sanhedrin, Rabbeinu Tam in Sefer Yashar is equating the ischaivus of Kiblolai. So again, the ischaivus of Kiblolai means what? Typically, a bezdin is going to require edim, the right number of edim ksherim, right, and the right number of dayanim ksherim. And the din of Namanal Abba Namanal Vicha Namanal Gimo Rai Bakar, both in Eidos and in Dayanus, as the Gemara has it, Mishnah of the Gemara in Sanhedrin, is that you can say Kiblu Alai. And the question is, if you say Kiblu Alai, right, at what point can you be Chozer? Right, so again, it sounds like a third case where you have a Yizkai, where, again, the default is to require a certain kind of process or a certain kind of result, right? Nijma v'niftar, in this case, the requirement of Eidim K'sherim and Dayanim K'sherim in the right number. And if this fellow, you know, puts himself out there, right, he's mischayev himself, but that changes the equation. And the question is, binding or not binding? So Rabbeinu Tam says, I disagree with Rashi, I disagree with those people who interpret Hamafkid differently, I disagree with Rashi in Shavuos, I disagree with Bali Tosis in Bam Metzia, right? You see from Sanhedrin that his chaybus is not binding. You can be chozer on Kibbol. Okay, Malchit Perusho. So how do you read the Gemara here? According to Rabbeinu Tam? Go ahead. Oh, he can be chozer even after he left Bezdin. What?
It's just more of a psychological.
Yeah, it's a psychological ploy. Okay. And again, it's a good psychological ploy because, you know, we would prefer not to be nishba, right? And again, all the things that we talked about before, about the stakes of Shavua and trivializing it and all of those things are reasons why we try to avoid Shavuos, and also they factor significantly into the issue that we discussed last time, which is, you know, the phenomenon, which is really quite remarkable. I mean, you have, you know, institutions d'oraisa of Shavua, right? And you have, you know, extensive, you know, substructure of drabanans surrounding them, the niftars and heses and all those things. And then you have, like, you know, the gaonim saying, well, we don't do that anymore, you know? Or, I'm just a fascinating phenomenon. It's very rare to find such a thing. But it's all part of this whole, you know, Shavuos, you know. And then Chasha Mona, Chasha Shwasa, connections and so on. Okay, so Yehi Bosh Milachsar, but basically, according to Rebbe Tam's reading of this Gemara, right, you could be Chozer. Okay, so it's a very basic Machlokes regarding at least two of these sugyas. Now, what will Rashi say about the third sugya, about Zebora? Okay, the Ode. Shuv nimsa b'shem Rabbeinu Tam. Okay, so that chutz lebezdin is that would be a different version of Rabbeinu Tam. Meaning, really, if it was lebezdin, it would be binding. If it's chutz lebezdin, then of course there's nothing to talk. I guess the chiddush in chutz lebezdin, just to speak that out, because we don't have a chance to learn Amafkid all the time. So, you know, when I get these opportunities, I do try to, you know, throw something in. But again, going back to what we spoke of before, how easy is it for the shomer, right, to be assuming the payment of keifa, right? And again, whether he becomes, you know, fully, you know, the address, or, you know, kind of the address is still the nignav, you know, just that, you know, it gets redirected into his bank account, you know. So this is an interesting question, because maybe can't be chozer, maybe he can be chozer as long as it's chutz lebezdin, but it sounds like if he wasn't chozer, right, and then the ganav is found, that the kabbalah of hareini mishalem, even chutz lebezdin, would be enough, right, to accomplish this. According to the other rishonim here, that is not necessarily the case. So again, how natural or artificial, right, this din is, you know, may very well play into this question. Okay, so again, can you lose it even if you are still obligated to pay? That's one extreme, right? Can you even in a situation which isn't binding, that's the opposite, you know, can you still acquire this chusei gvia? Right, that's the opposite extreme. And in between, no, it depends on whether or not it's a binding commitment or not. Good. Inami? Wait, so Bebezdin, Kinipirashnu, okay. From the Mamar Bebezdin, Lo matzi hada bein. Okay. That would be like we were saying for Rashi before, according to the first day. Yeah. Ubahu de Zabora Gufe. So now, Tosis, what do you think about this line in Tosis? Tosis is saying, oh, this is a raya for Rashi. Right, did Rashi say anything about Gmar Din? No. So Tosis here, and this is the point I want to bring out in just a few minutes, Tosis here is now projecting something else on Rashi. And that is that the Yisod of Rashi is based on Gmar Din. Right? Not pure Schaibus, right, but Gmar Din. Not in the skybus with an N, but Gmar Din itself. Okay. And with the added assumption that when a person says Dorli Bekai Rosho or something like that, that constitutes a Gmar Din. Legabe his skybus, at least. Okay, we'll talk about that. The truth is that the Gemara in Sanhedrin itself, right, in the Sugya of Kibolai, has a discussion, number one, whether the machalik between Etain and Machol, which we'll talk about in a minute, and number two, whether the machlokas is Lifne or La'achar Gmar Din. So that's a pashut. We'll get back to that. Miu Yesh Lomar, well, he himself says, right? The Lokari Gmar Din. Right, so now Tosis is raising a different question, and that is, let's assume everything does depend on Gmar Din. What is the Hagdara of Gmar Din? Is it the commitment or the change of direction, you know, in the Din Torah? Let's say you have a Din Torah, and, you know, again, default, you know, it is Ikra Dino, which is default, it's going to be solved in a certain way. You know, what happens if you, you know, commit yourself or something happens to kind of change that direction? You inject a different, you know, factor, you know, that can a different method of resolution other than the default one. Like, oh, if you take a shvua, it'll be fine. Right? That's not the way the Din Torah is supposed to go or is going. You know, that's an act of volition. That's not according to the books. Right? Does that commitment, that change in direction, does that constitute a Gmar Din, at least legabe this particular halacha? Or not? Or does Gmar Din depend on, well, we'll sum it up in a couple of minutes, does Gmar Din depend on an action or that commitment being, you know, implemented? Or maybe Gmar Din, Lagabi, these dinim depend on what we normally mean when we say Gmar Din, right? A, you know, a more formal Gmar Din, which is a little complicated too, as we know. I believe we had that this year as well, did we? Yeah, in Shuas, right? We talk about Lasagur Mipneish and those things. Namely, Nathan? Well, what's the complication? Tseitainlo, Chayvatalitainlo, Kloniata Chayiv, Kloniata Potur. Right, as we know, you know, in Shas, right, Gmar Din is described in different ways. You know, three different ways, even in a formal level. Right, now what Bali Tosis have injected is there another kind of a Gmar Din, right, even an earlier one, you know, based on, again, what I'm calling like a volitional commitment, you know, that changes the default direction or the default dependence, you know, of the Din Torah. So, you know, committing to a different resolution, a different method, actually implementing that commitment, that's a later stage, or do you need, you know, Yotzami Bezdin? Is Yotzami Bezdin a kind of Gmar Din Legabe Yischaibus? Maybe. Or is it, just in sequence, you know, Ploniata Chayiv, Ploniata Patur, Chayiv Atalitain Lo, right? Or Tseitain Lo. I just mentioned six different, in sequence, in other words, in you know, six different ways you know, that we could define Gemar Din legabe his chaybus. Change in direction, implementation of that, Yotzei Mibezdin, right, and the three candidates, you know, as they appear, you know, in different contexts for Gemar Din. What constitutes Gemar Din legabe this his chaybus? But speaking of this in terms of Gemar Din may be different than speaking of it from the perspective of pure hischaibos, as we'll discuss. Okay, keep going. V'chein ma'asher perek yeshnoch, and that's the fourth sugya, kufchafkes, the v'girsas rach, gabi abde ganavta. What's the case there?
That some guy said that you stole, that you have my evidence,
yeah,
in your possession. He says, no, you stole it to me, you gave it to
me. He says what? He said, yeah, I mean, kofar bakol, basically. Right, exactly. Again, he takes the initiative, he changes the default course and direction of this din Torah, because all he has to do is be niftar, or just taina and be niftar, in shvayim alav adim too, right? By, you know, initiating a new, you know, a method of resolution, if you will, and one which, you know, puts the onus on the other party, right? Is that binding or not? Like, it sounds great, and let's say he comes back the next day or 10 minutes later and he says, yeah, you know, that was far too generous of me, or I consulted with my lawyer, you know, and he said, you know, don't do that, right? So, that's the question. So, the girs of Rabbeinu Chananel in Avdi Ganavta, V'hum Erlo Ganavti, is Mativu Atzlcha, etc. So Garatz Ritzoncha Hashbeah Vitol. So Vinishba, the question is, do you have the Vav or not?
Yeah.
Right? So Vinishba Eni Yachal Achserbo Mash Medaf Kishanishba. Avakonim Shanishba Yachal. You're reading, right? Not me. Sorry, I get excited. Go ahead. Aval, go ahead. Konim Shanishba.
Konim Shanishba Yachal Achserbo.
Yeah. Yes, from the Garsi.
From the Garsi. Hosan Mishba Veinu Yachal.
To me, it's an imperative, right?
And
namely, he's got to be nishba, ve'eino yachal achserbo, I mean the commitment to law. Okay. So, you have this very interesting debate, you know, in the Rishonim, and the question is what to do with it. Again, I don't want to spend so much time on it, so you know, we'll try to streamline it, I guess, as much as possible. So again, just taking a step back, we have this machlokas in our sugya, right? Whether or not he is, you know, bound to his commitment, you know, to be mishalim belo nishba, or no, he's not bound at all, right? Until he pays, he's not bound, and you know, we're just trying to, you know, move things along. So psychologically, you know, he'll be less likely to you know, to recant his eschaivas. So that's a major, major debate. And then we have the same argument, you know, played out. Then the Rishonim, the Bali Tosas, bring up four sugyas, essentially, right? Our sugya here, the Shomrim sugya about Kefel in Bambitziah. There too, it seems like there's a clear debate, you know, whether or not you know, before he actually pays, you know, he can back out from his commitment, right? There, as we noted, there's also an added, a wild card discussion, and that is, what is Koveya Legabe, the Zechia of Gvias Kefa, right, in either direction? Can he be Mechuyav and still not get the Kefa? Can he, you know, not be completely mechuyav, like Kabbalah Chutz Lebezdin, and still get the kefel, right? Or does it depend on the hischaibus? And then the contrast to a third party, and the discussion of, you know, how we look at, you know, the shomer in general, particular shomer maybe is a factor too, you know, maybe part of that question, as well as the question of kefel in general. But again, clearly what emerges from that is that there is a debate, you know, about whether he can exit from that hiskaibus, he can back out or not. Then you have the sugya in Sanhedrin, right, kiblo alai, that the Rishonim think also are part of this discussion, There, actually, the Gemara itself, as I say, discusses the possible difference between Etain and Makol. Now, again, it's hard to assess that, and we're not going to spend much time on it. A couple years ago, we learned Sanhedrin. So we talked extensively in the Gemara there on Davav and Zion, the sugya of Pshara in the beginning of Sanhedrin, about the question that, you know, the massive tosis there about Mechila, Tzricha Kinyan, or Ein Tzricha Kinyan, right? And the difference between Mechila and Kinyan, right? In other words, is it basically they're the same, and the differences in terms of Das and seriousness, or fundamentally there's a difference between Mechila and you know, Etain, because Mechila, you're just really kind of letting something, you're relinquishing something. And even if it's a ben, so you know, it's a kind of like a siluk, therefore the quality of that is different. So the question whether or not hischaibus lemechila and hischaibus, right, to a yuzma, to an initiative, are treated differently, is partly a debate about that, but it's also partly a debate about, again, this question of hischaibus. How easy is it, right, to accomplish hischaibus in a vacuum, or to accomplish hischaibus, let's just say, to initiate hischaibus? Only legabe mechila, or even legabe emkol, and then similarly or parallel, the Gemara has a discussion. You know, is the machlokas lifnei Gemar din or lachar Gemar din? So that's the third sugya. Then the fourth sugya is a sugya in Balvasar Daf Kuf Chav Ches, where again the fellow is completely potter, probably doesn't even have to take a shvua, but again he, you know, kind of puts himself on the line, and he says, you know what? For the sake of pius or whatever, you know, if you're willing to swear, I'm willing to give. And once again, two girsos, whether or not that is binding or not. Okay, so that's the argument. I think there are three perspectives. In all those cases, there's an argument. And I think that, you know, there are basically four perspectives, maybe, that one could apply to the discussion, and then you have to look very carefully in the Rishonim, the language, and so on and so forth. The first is that this debate revolves around the question of Hischaibus, and whether Hischaibus needs a Kinyan. It's how easy or difficult is it to generate a Hischaibus. And then it should be linked, you know, to another well-known debate, or other well-known debates, but one in particular. And that is, there seems to be a debate among the Rishonim in general, whether Hischaibus requires a Kinyan. The Rambam, as we mentioned, in Hilchos Mechira, Perikid Aleph Halacha Tesvav, you know, where he basically follows the Rif's reading of the Sugya Ksuvos Daf Kuf Beis, which seems to be that Hischaibus doesn't require a Kinyan. Now again, that itself is a little bit tricky. The Rambam makes the comparison to Arev. Arev is tricky. Arev is tricky even within the worldview of the Rambam, right? So that Arev is tricky within the worldview of the Rambam, I'm not going to discuss, but I believe we did discuss that extensively in Kiddushin, right? Shua? Yeah? Josh? Avi? Alex? Okay, good. We're in agreement? Back here? Okay. Just want to make sure we got everybody in. Right, so I tried to show then that I think there's a consistency in Shitas HaRambam, but it is a little bit complicated how we look at Arev. And, you know, this Rambam, Perikid Aleph Halacha Tesvav, this mashal is part of the complexity. In other words, Arev is really pure Hischaibus, or Arev is a kind of, you know, Bahiyya Hanah. Basically, three perspectives you could take on Arev. One is that it's pure Hischaibus. And it's just not an asmachta bialma. As the Gemara says about Arev in the end of Bava Basra, that by hiyana, that the guy listens to you, right? Gomar v'shab v'shibed nafshe. And the question is how to read that line in the Gemara. So somebody showed him read it that, you know, Hischaibus works. And the Bahiyana neutralizes asmachta. Now, it's to show that we're serious and that it isn't a guzma, right? It's not, you know, something that, you know, you're not taking seriously in terms of all contingencies. So the Bahiyanah kind of eliminates that problem. But really, 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 Arev is pure Schaibus, and maybe that's what the Rambam, you know, has in mind. Or another possibility is that, you know, the Hischaibus of Arev isn't just a Hischaibus, it's a kind of a Tachlif, you know, it's like a Kinyan al Yedei Hana. Hana, we find, right, in some cases, is the equivalent of Kasef. You'll see that next year also in Bava Kamma. Certainly saw it last year in Kiddushin and discussed it extensively as well. When it is, when it's not, you know, what is it, Shavapruta? Is it, you know, when does it work, when does it doesn't, etc. The third idea is that Arev is a Loveh. Right? In other words, who says a Loveh is only the person who physically receives the Matan Mos? Maybe the Loveh is the guy who is responsible for, who motivates the Nesinas Hamos. Meaning, and the guy also who puts himself on the line, that he'll do the Tashlumin. One or both, or maybe the combination. Maybe that makes him not the Loveh. No question that the Mekabel of the money, of the Matan Mos, is a Loveh. Right? There's no question about that. The question is whether an Arev is also a Loveh. And if so, an equal Loveh, secondary Loveh, you know, how exactly does that work? But the way that it would work would be what I just said, because he's the one who inspires. The reason that the Malva, you know, had the confidence to give. So one way to look at it is that, you know, it's kind of like, you know, Maramokom. You know, he gives it to the, you know, Mekabel Hamos, that Lova, you know, but really that's his way of giving it to you. Or certainly that's what motivated him, right, to make this loan. And you know, that's where the Tashlumin also, or primarily, is coming from. There's different types of Arevs also, Arev Kablan, regular Arev, right? So the point is that there are basically, all things being equal, three ways to understand, you know, Arev. And the Rambam, in different places, seems to, you know, relate to all three. So I don't want to go into that. I said we could look at back at the Shiurim and Kiddushin for that. But I think that the Rambam thinks that there's an overlap of the three, and there's good reason why he emphasizes Arev differently where he does. But again, that is Ayin Sham. But at the end of the day, Perek Yud Aleph, Halacha Tezvav, by equating, you know, his Schaivus with Arev, meaning in a case where there is no Arev, the Rambam certainly does seem to be saying that an aspect of Arev is pure Hischaibus. And that's the way the Rambam, I think, is generally understood. And again, it seems to have its antecedent in the Rif, and seems to be disputed by the Balitosis and others in the way they read Ksuvos Kufbeis and so on. Agav, I should mention, this is quite interesting, that the Ksos, I always mention this, every kind of labriot, every like 40 simonim or so, Simon Mem and Simon Pei, and like, you know, almost clockwork, you know. Or put it this way, 40 simonim do not go by without the Ksos, you know, revisiting, you know, this issue and, you know, promoting, you know, his view, which is that his view of the Rambam is, Shua, remember? Is that the din of Hischaibus is a kind of Kinyan Odisa. It works through Hodah, the Rambam says, in Perkei Avot. So if a person's Moda, you know, that somebody owes him, that, you know, he owes somebody money, even though everybody knows that he doesn't, that works, and it works kind of as his chaibus. So the Ksos understands that based on Sugin Bava Basra, you know, Kuf Mem Zayin, Kuf Mem Ches, whatever it is, as something called a Kinyan Odisa. He thinks that his chaibus is a kind of Kinyan Odisa in general. Okay. But that aside, the Pashtus of the Rambam, and notwithstanding not only the Ksos, but the other complexities that I mentioned, I mean, what, when you're Mekadesh, you know, with the Arev, you know, are you saying Arev Mekadesh is B'mamon Zeh or B'hanozu? Right? And so on and so forth, all these issues. In the end of the day, according to the Rambam, there appears to be a din that his Chaivos, Bili Kinyan, is binding. Okay. And other Rishonim disagree. So one way to look at the argument between you know, Rashi, Tosis, Rabbeinu Tam, the Girsa, the Rach, all these sugyas is to say it's part of that general argument, namely whether his chaybus b'li kinyan is binding or not. And if that's the case, then we would, just one more second, we would kind of downgrade two other things. The factor of Gemar Din. If Gemar Din is a factor, it's just a factor in being Magdir, I guess, the solidifying of the Ischaivos. But it's not Gemar Din per se. Or maybe there's no Din of Gemar Din at all, or it's not formal Gemar Din. It's just a way of trying to figure out, you know, when what we'll call Asukin Ba'oso Inyan, in a way. Right? Some of the Rishonim use the language of Asukin Ba'oso Inyan. The Ramban, for example, in Bava Basra, Daf Kuf Chav Kes Amud Aleph, says, why do we care whether he's Yotzei Mibezdin or not? Why is that a factor? So the Ramban says, because till then it's like Asukin Ba'oso Inyan. So it isn't, that's what he says. Right, according to some of the Bali Tosas, as we know, Yotzei Mibezdin seems to be a factor in Gemar Din. Right? So the point is that if you take this first perspective, then you know you're going to say more like the Rambam, that you know the Gemar Din or Yotzei Mibezdin isn't a din per se in Gemar Din, but it's a kind of an asukin, you know, ba'oso inyan, you know, kind of halacha. And you're going to say this is like major debate among the Rishonim. It appears here as well. How is that going to be consistent if you generally don't hold like the Rambam? Good question. But then we're also going to say that the specific contexts are mostly not relevant or not decisive in this issue. These are examples, right? Not the common denominator of all these examples or the particular detail. Again, there might be individual chilukim, you know, when how you define asukim boso inyan in certain cases, you know, when you're serious about your hischaibus and it isn't an asmachta, you know, in certain cases. But all things being equal, this would belong to that bigger question of whether or not hischaibus does or does not require a kinyan. That's, I think, approach number one. And then Rashi would be more in line with the Rambam and, you know, Rabbeinu Tam, certainly in Sefer Yashar, and Rabbeinu Hananel, and those would be more in line with the other views, etc. Yeah, not that.
Okay, just noting, for the Rambam itself, for the Sugyos in Temple Sanhedrin,
yeah.
He says that there has to be a
king. Yeah, not only that, but there has to be. You talk about Zeborer.
Yeah.
Even more so, the Hagdara of Gemar Din, that's a big Kiddush in the Rambam that they all jump on. I think I mentioned earlier in the year we talked about the, you know, on Daf Lamed, but namely, what's the Rambam's remarkable Shita? The Rambam's the most extreme Shita on that. Namely? Yeah, you actually require Hotzas Mamo. Right? In the Sanhedrin case, the Rambam requires Hotzas Mamon. What's the other extreme? Even in the Hagdara of Gemar Din, the Shach, who says that everybody, once again the Shach, right? Who says that everybody will agree, right, that you know Gemar Din means Ploniata Zakai, Ploniata Chai. That's the earliest stage of Gemar Din. Now, all these, you know, the Tzadavka, da da da. The real Gemar Din is the earliest Gemar Din, and that is true, even, he says this, in the context of the Sugya of Kibbul Olai, in Chosh Mishpat. So you have that extreme, but 100%. So again, that militates a little bit, the Rambam certainly militates a little bit against ignoring, let's say, some of the differences between these cases. Okay. So that's one approach, and that would be, I guess, the approach to that approach. In other words, downgrading Gemar Din, turning it into Asuka Bosa Inyan, downgrading the distinction between the cases, unless, again, they figure into, you know, Asmachta or Asukin, etc. And as I say, I think there's a lot that commends that. The assumption then is, also, again, one of the assumptions that we're making by kind of downgrading or downplaying the differences between these, the different cases themselves, and especially these cases and the Rambam's case, is that there's no difference between a Yeshchaibus, which comes kind of Yesh Me'ayin, if you will, meaning in a vacuum, with no pressure, counter-pressure, at least no pressure in the framework at the moment, the legal pressure. I don't know what the personal pressures on the man is, that's irrelevant, but I'm talking about legally. As opposed to the four cases that we're dealing with, right, which Bali Tosis bring together, all of which are cases of a Din Torah and Bez Din. Right? If we were to take this approach, that this is about general ischaivus and how binding it is without a kinyan, right, we'd be saying that these are hechatimtzis. But the fact that there's a Din Torah here, and certainly, you know, the particular details of each side's, you know, the struggle between them, let's say, and the assets, you know, that each one has in this particular case is certainly not a factor. Okay? Except maybe, again, to the extent that we're talking about Asmachta and Guzma, you know, and those kind of things. But all things being equal, a Hiskaibus, which I generate without any kind of legal framework, you know, I just commit myself to giving you $1,000. Or through Hodah, I say, I owe you $1,000. I admit something which you both know and acknowledge, the recipient and the Mishayev, is just not true. Right? We're saying there's no difference between that and a situation where initially the framework is that you have this, you know, controversy and you have this debate about the facts and about the law, right? And in the context of that give and take, that Din Torah, right, people, you know, go out on a limb in terms of how to resolve the case. Well, it doesn't matter. Right? That's perspective number one, let's say. Perspective number two, I would say, is that we do make that distinction that I just was referring to. Namely, the discussion, l'kula and l'chumra, maybe in both directions, is that, you know, there's a difference between initiating a schaivus from whole cloth, I mean from where nothing, no framework, etc., as opposed to, you know, where we're dealing with a situation where there are already, you know, there's a towing and there's a nittan, and there are tainas, and there is a struggle. L'kula and l'chum. Right? Number one, let's say, on the one hand you might say, well, the Rambam will tell you that maybe it's easier to take seriously a hischaivus that is yesh me'ayin, because it doesn't have to overcome, right, an existing structure and framework. Like, you know, there are rules in Dinei Torah. You know, and therefore overriding those rules, and the rules matter, I mean, they're not there, you know, arbitrarily, coincidentally. Right? They're there because that's the best way, you know, the halacha has a tradition on efficiency and on justice, both, and especially the combination of those two. Right, so to veer from that, you know, is a larger commitment, in a way. That's one way to say, you know, that the Rambam is very liberal, you know, about his chaibus yesh me'ayin, but doesn't mean that necessarily in any of these cases, you know, that he will be very liberal, you know, about adjusting. And again, I don't mean just because of asmachta and this is the default and therefore the posturing that goes on in a court, you know, trying to win the hearts and minds, you know, of the judges and the New York Times and all the rest of it. I mean, legally, right? You have to overcome, you know, what is considered to be a very powerful thing, right? Din Torah and its structures. That's one way to look at it. The other way to look at it, of course, is in the absolutely opposite. So that's why maybe you'll get the phenomenon that maybe the Rambam will be, and the Rif could be very expansive about his chaibus, you know, yesh me'ayin, and maybe much more reticent, you know, about these cases. Right? That's a second perspective, A. Or the opposite, and maybe this is true especially for Rashi, and for some of the Bali Tosis, and that is maybe hischaivus yesh me'ayin, and again, not just we can make the asmachta argument there too. You know, it's just too hyperbolic, and I don't know this guy anything. So, you know, how I'm going to just, you know, it goes in both directions. Both the asmachta argument both go in both directions, as well as just the capacity, you know, to be mischayev, and what that mischayevus means goes in both directions. Right? So in a struggle, a din Torah between us, where presumably each person has a taina, and in some cases, I'll get to this in a second, it's not just the tainas they have, there are like other, you know, factors in mechayvim that just complicate the relationships. I'll explain that in just a minute. So there, both on the pragmatic asmachta level, in other words, taking seriously a eschaivos, and especially just on the flexibility and therefore the ability to invoke other solutions, right, it's just going to be easier. I don't need as much heavy lifting if, you know, if there's, you know, a very, you know, small gap, you know, between these two tainas, you know, and somebody is proposing another way, you know, to resolve it. Because each side has a taina, and in some cases, obviously I'm getting ready to make some other distinctions, each side, you know, has a foundation for their taina. Therefore, one might say that the capacity to be mischayev in this framework is greater. Moreover, this may be part of it as well, you know, again, if the purpose of din, it can go in both directions. If the purpose of din is to combine efficiency and justice and idealism, right? If the Bali Dinim themselves, you know, are willing, right, to be more flexible, right, sometimes that can be perceived as part of din. Marshal Ma Davardoma, again, getting back to our Sanhedrin days, the topics of Pshara, the topic of Kiblalai, right? Namely, where some people think, we'll discuss this more fully in just a minute, that these are pure hiskaivas, and of course they're two different topics. It's a parallel question, but you can be machalik in either direction. Some people think we're talking about pure hiskaivas and an abandonment of din, and some people think, good solid group of Rishonim, that we're talking about tweaking the system and personalizing, you know, the process, but on the contrary of not just pure hiskaivos, but hiskaivos of, you know, a different hagdara, and so on. So the ability to make that argument makes us a different kind of hiskaivos. Then you can say, you know, in the direction up, that even if you don't know, like the Rambam and the Rif, about pure hiskaivos, right, in these frameworks, we look at the hiskaivos in a very different way, both because of the asmachta problem and the what it is that I'm trying to accomplish given other people's the dialectic of rights, as well as this last point, which is maybe there's a certain flexibility in din and in process which allows for these kinds of adjustments. That last point is really not so much as chaibos, but as chaibos that generates, right, status or stature, you know, in din. Moreover, this also opens the possibility, right, for a third perspective. And that is that this isn't about hischaibus, it's about gemar din. Maybe it's about a more flexible hagdara of what gemar din is, based on some of these considerations. So it doesn't even belong under the rubric of hischaibus, right? Except again that the hischaibus changes how we define gemar din itself. And some of the Rishonim, again, based on understanding of the sugya and Zaborer, but again, Rishonim here, we just saw in this Tosis, you have to look at all the Tosis, in Tosis Bava Metzia, Tosis Bava Basra, Tosis in Sanhedrin, Rabban Bava Basra, the Rimi Gash, and so on. Some of them definitely seem to be focused, as we've seen already, on what is the definition of Gemar Din, as if the Eschaibos question isn't the Ikar question, but the Hagdara of Gemar Din is the Ikar question. Having said that, does somebody have a question before I get to the final perspective? Having said that, it also would seem very reasonable, once we don't see this as, you know, unconditionally, you know, just about broad hischaivos b'likinyan, right? Once we are taking into consideration the different frameworks and contexts, whether it be with regard to, you know, the possibility of initiating hischaivos, or the possibility of redefining certain categories, that's a second, or redefining Gemar Din, to be mechalek, even within some of the Bez Din cases themselves, or the Toin V'Nitan cases themselves. Because it is very reasonable to think, based on some of the arguments that I just made, right, that instead of thank you, one second. Instead of across the board distinguishing between Yesh Me'ayin and a Bezdin framework, Lakula or Lachumra, maybe we should consider what some of the factors are in each case. Now, the Bali Tosis, we're assuming, Kedarkam, that's what they do for a living, you know, Baruch Hashem. Like, where would we be without them? But saying where would we be without them is not the same as taking them for granted, you know, both in terms of appreciating their contribution, but also in some cases, in terms of considering the possibility of alternatives. Right. So what they did here, classically, is they scoured Shas and they came up with four cases which seemed to be about the same topic, and then they themselves, you know, made some chilukim, mostly technical ones, you know, it is Bezdin, it's not Bezdin, you know, it's Kodim Gemar Din, it's Lachar Gemar Din, and, you know, possibly, you know, a few more, you know, technical differences. But at the end of the day, there's nothing in the sugyas themselves that bind these cases to each other. And considering that, I think it's clear that there's a default, easier way to read each sugya, and then, you know, not so terribly difficult, but, you know, you have to, you know, basically, I wouldn't say contort, but you have to tweak a little bit in order to, you know, justify the sugya according to a different perspective. Given that that is the case, the possibility that we might be mechalik based on either the different subject matters or the balance of power and the particular factors in each case is something that presents itself. So, for example, in our sugya, our local sugya, right, the pashtus of the Gemara, I think, we would agree, is like Rashi. Now, there's a view of Rabbeinu Tam that our sugya would be, you know, get them out of Bezdin as soon as possible, you know, because then psychologically, you know, he's less likely to back out, is interesting, it's fascinating, but, you know, probably Rashi's Perush of the Gemara is, you know, is easier, you know, to accept. The sugya in Bamitzia, you know, in Kefel, sounds, you know, a little bit more, you know, like Rabbeinu Tam and less like Rashi. There, the onus was to try to fit in Rashi, right? As for Sanhedrin, that's extremely complicated because you have the Eptain and the Machol and the Gemar Din. It sounds like there are factors there that, you know, are being, you know, considered that don't appear in any of the others. So again, it just seems different. And as for Balabasra, Kuf Chav Ches, it depends on the Girsa, you know. Vinishba, Nishba, etc. So, instead of taking the, you know, kind of holistic view that Bali Tosis are, which is that this is one question basically, you know, and let's, you know, figure it out, you know, and especially the impact of one sugya's resolution on the other, which is the exception, which is the rule, you know, in terms of hechtimtzis, one might say that either the Hagdara of Gemar Din, right, or the balance of power, and therefore the need for how much initiative in his chaibus, or the possibility of just redefining or the flexibility of definition is just greater in some cases than others. Okay, so let's just take each case very quickly. We'll start with our case. So our case, not so clear what we're talking about, but the pashtus, what are we talking about, Itzi, in our case? The pashtus. I mean, there's certain things we certainly don't know, but I mean, in general, pashtus, what are we talking about? It sounds like we're talking about Shurus HaDayanim, which would be Nijma V'Niftar, right? And where the guy basically says, you know what, I'm going to bypass that for Haredi Misham, correct? And we don't know which Shmua. We don't know if it's Ein Echad, we don't know if it's Shomrim, we don't know if it's Mor of the Miksas. Since it comes in this Sugya against the background of the Mishnah, you know, and especially for those who think that Shurus HaDayanim is really only Mor of the Miksas, know, so it's easy to think that we're talking about Motiv Benikzah, certainly. Certainly there's no reason to think we're talking about Shuas HaShomrim in particular, but it's certainly we're also talking about Motiv Benikzah, we're talking about Nijma V'Niftar and so on. So when we think about the question of, you know, the guy saying, I won't do it, I'll pay, right? It seems to me, at least, that it's very legitimate, right, to be thinking about this, in, you know, against the backdrop of Yitzi? Of what sugya? That we spend a lot of time on.
Is that true?
And more particularly, not the same case as this at all, but the topic. Shua Seid Echad is an example, and certainly a very good example. Mitosh Shenichal Shava Mishalim. Which is what you mean, 100%. I'm just saying, the right, those are the words. In other words, in that topic, the status of Shuvah Seidecho, the status of Shuvah Doraisa, as reflected by the fact that sometimes it gets converted into Mammon, right? Well, just say, we don't need to go through the whole sugya again. It took a long time. And, you know, it's a very, very important topic. But, you know, in principle, what we tried to develop was, you know, two opposite extremes and some nuances in between, right? Which is that there's a huge gap between Shavua and Mammon. And even a Shavua Daraisa is simply kind of Lahafis Daito Shabalabayas, but you're Nijma V'Niftar because we don't believe you, you know, and this guy's putter and the other guy is not. And if you take that perspective, that's an anomaly, that is a Knas Daraisa, that's a, you know, Reisa, all the things that we discussed. If you take that view, then when a guy comes to court and he says, you know what, I can be Nijma V'Niftar, but I'm going to pay. Right? It's not so far from the Rambam's, you know, his Chaibus, you know, Yesh Me'ayim. Because he's really Potter. I mean, there's a difference, right? It's Chaib Shvua. He benefits from not taking Shvua. And that is a benefit, kol olam kulo nizdazeya, for all the reasons that we discussed. So it's still different, and you can still be mechalek. But all I'm saying is, in the bigger picture of things, the more we think of Shvua and Mammon as being radically different, and the more we think of Shvua as something which doesn't imply any kind of chiyuv to him, or even that we take seriously or give credence to his argument, you know, the guy can be nizra v'niftar because, you know, overwhelmingly we believe that he's potter. So then, it may not be the Rambam, but it's not so far from it either. And therefore, you need a bigger, you know, hischaivos, right, in order to be chai. But if we take the opposite view, which is that a shvua is a ptur tashlumin, right, or even if it's one notch lower, it's an alternative, right, or even if it's one notch lower than that, you know, namely a shvua is a commodity, it's a biror, you know, it's more than Lahafis Daito Shabalabayas, and you owe him that at least. Right? And then, you know, get to the whole taxi cab, you know, driver, mashal. right? You know, before credit cards and Ubers and so on. So, you know, once you get in that realm, so when you think about it, when the guy says Hareini Mishalem, you know, it's a pretty fair tachlif. He's not so going out on a limb, both on an asmachta level and on a, you know, capacity to be mischayev level. You know, it's not earth-shattering, you know, it's not earth-shaking. It's just basically, you know, he's substituting one for the other. Okay? That's our case. That's Nizra v'Nifta. When it comes to Bab Metzia, I basically already described it. Hopefully I did some of the, you know, some of the investing before, right? We spent a couple of minutes talking about, you know, how it can be that somebody can be Zoka the Kefel, why him more than, you know, some third party, you know, what about, you know, him losing that even if he's going to pay, what about him getting it even if his agreement to pay isn't yet binding, right? We spent all the time talking about that. What that was about was the question, really, you know, in the context of Shomrim, you know, how potter is he really? Or how much is he really part of the actual, you know, we were talking about in terms of, you know, did the Ganav also steal from him? And therefore he can, not just as a redirected address of the Nignav, you know, but actually be entitled and actually assume that status, because to some extent it really was taken from him and so on. That's what we were talking about before. But that whole same discussion, you know, belongs to the bigger question that I alluded to, which is, when it comes to a shomer, is, you know, is he kind of any odeim praticha, or is he kind of any odeim im ischayavti? Right? And we've talked about this before. Right? It goes to the question, for example, the shvua that he has to take, so let's repeat it again, bears repeating, is a shvua betayna safek. And as we noted, the Ravid's opinion about that is that, you know, it's a weaker shvua, it's more of a pius because of that. You don't even know bevadai that he did it. You cannot even accuse him of anything. So what you really want is for him to make a statement to placate, you know, and to cover the situation as is. Okay. Right, you're certainly going to be more mekel in shvuas hashomrim, the tainus suffek, than anything else. Or in terms of tainus katan, if there's no tainus, you don't need a tainus vadai, you probably don't need a gadol as well. That's the Ravid's view. And the Rimi Gash, who said it very, very powerfully in Shavuos, in the sixth parak, we'll get to it, hopefully. I hope we'll get to it. But if not, we're getting to it now. And the Rambam almost copied the language when he talks about that issue, right? Doesn't see it that way. The Rambam sees, and the Rimi Gash earlier sees, another one of the Rambam Rimi Gash connections, but this time he adopted it, not just adapted it. The Rambam really perceives, and the Ravid, and the Rimi Gash, sorry, that Shua B'Tayna Safek reflects a Chumra. Right? He has to pair B'Tayna Safek because even though you don't have a Taina against him, default, he's Mechuyim L'Hashiv Esa Aveda. I'm sorry, it's a Pikadon. Right? Because he's Eni Odea Im Praticha, not Eni Odea Im Eschayavti. Right? And therefore, even a Katan, no Kav Chomer. Right, we're not going to say that it's a kula, and essentially that was the whole discussion of the ksos of the shach. If eidechad misayeyas potter minashvua, potter minashvua. Right, is there a difference between shvuas hashomrim and the others, and in which direction? And the rabbi would probably tell you, you know, if it's potter other shvuas, it's potter this, unless, by the way, you take the shvuas heses inversion theory, which is, you know, it's so flimsy that you might as well take it, you know? But that isn't what the Xos was arguing. He wasn't arguing that point. He was arguing the opposite way. He was saying, basically, you know, you have a Chiyuv Hashava, that Chiyuv Hashava expresses itself also in the Shvua, and therefore it's Einei Dam Praticha. So even if Eidechad Mesayeh is Poter Mimotiv Mikzas, or even Meyedechad, or maybe it's only Poter, or whatever, nonetheless, not Mishuas HaShomrim. Wow. Right? So, in light of that, if we're talking about Hischaivus to be Meshalem in Shuas HaShomrim, and in the context of also making him like a substitute or an assumed, you know, a Nignav, Lagabe Kefel, right? Maybe this guy was there is less. But if you think the way the Raivid does or others, then maybe it's more. Right? Because maybe it's really in the name of Chayavti. And it's a Slahafis Daito. So he's Potel Gambri. This, you know, affects many of Dinei Shmira. Right? Through Balavimo, when is the Shibud, when is the Chiyuv and the Shibud of a Shomer begin? Is it Mishas, you know, Hafkada? Is it Mishas Takala? You know, if it's Mishas Hafkada, is that just a Xeros HaKasuv and a Shibud Lamafreya? Or is that because, no, it's all a Chiyuv HaShava, so it all traces back to that issue. That discussion of Rishonim in Ksuvah Saf Lamed Dalid and in Bava Kamma, you know, in that parallel Sogya, so, you know, Kamla Bidraba Mine, all those issues come to fore. So, you might say, you know, in analyzing our Sogya versus Bava Metzia, that, you know, we're dealing with a different dynamic. Certainly, that is the case that might be applied to Bava Basra, Kuf Kaf Ches, because that's a case where the guy probably isn't even a Chayav Shua, because it's Avdi Ganavta. Right? He initiates, you know, take a Nizba Venoto. Right? And then you have the yourselves. So actually, maybe the Chiddush in that Gemara is that even though a person's going to lose, you know, how much of a gap do we perceive there to be between the winner and the loser, even though he's going to win? That's one way to look at it, this is what we've been talking about till now, is that the winner, you know, it's like an absolutist thing. We say it with conviction. The other guy has no case. You know, he's pata legamri. Another way to look at it is that, you know, whenever there's a taina, and there's a lack of pure cheskas kashrus, so it's all a, you know, it's a very close context. This has many, many other nafkamina. How do we look at a situation of a din Torah where some one person is clearly alpidin, you know, has the winning hand and the other not, to the Motz Mechamer Lavaraya, basically. You know, do we look at that in a decisive way and say he's a Gamri Pator? Or is that just a way to break the deadlock? And the Nafkaminas, things like this, how much does it take for the other guy to get back into the game? Or, when we project, you know, his side of things, how much of an initiative, you know, how mechudash is that really in the end of the day? So if he doesn't, you don't even know him a shvua, and he says, you know, nijma v'notel, but it's based on pretty much motzi mechaver lavaraya, right? Or there not being any basis for the shvua, whatever heses, you know, or avadim. So that either is a case where the yitzchayvus is yesh me'ayin practically, right? Or not, depending on this perspective. And then finally, of course, the fourth sugya, and then I'll take all the questions, is the sugya of kibbolai. So as we've discussed many, many times, I mean, that goes to the core of what's going on in kibbolai, as we discussed. You could say the whole kibbolai is a totally different topic. Kibbolai is about, you know, masna mashakosu b'torah b'tzai davar shibamamon. That's how the Rabbian Atshuva characterizes it, and that's how the Rajban Atshuva characterizes it, and that's how the Re Al-Madri, you know, in the Sanhedrin Katana series, or Gedola, I don't remember, you know, characterize, there's a group of Rishonim that say, that invoke a phrase, Masa Mashakosim Bator B'tayin Over Shuvah Mamon, by which presumably they do not mean, you know, that you could be Mishai of yourself, but they mean you can redefine, you know, Edus and Dayanus. And if they mean that, then the Hischaibus, you know, is not Hischaibus for $100, that's the consequence. The Hischaibus is, you know, to redefine who's a Dayan and who's an Eid. And to the extent, this is what we talked about earlier in the year, there are numerous Nafkamina. Right? Are there limitations, aside from Asmachta, of who can be a Dayan, who can be an Eid, in that circumstance? What about a hedjon? What about an akum? What about an isha in either dayan or edus, and you might be makabik? What about tartil reyusa? Again, if it isn't all just about a smachta, but it's about substance, you know, what's convertible, let's say, that's about how pernicious are those miutim, right? And how limited is the conversion ability, but then you're talking about a real conversion ability, right? So the question of, you know, what constitutes gemar din, you know, what constitutes, you know, the point of no return, very much part of that question. Of course, the Shuasa Eidos question, right? The Yerushalmi again, you know, let's say, kibbul alai, are you chayiv Shuasa Eidos or not? That whole issue that we, you know, discussed. On the financial level, on the conversion, you know, into shame aid question, but not an objective shame aid. Again, I don't want to, you don't need to do chazar on it, but that whole issue is relevant here. If the Bali Tosis assume that, you know, the sugya and zeborer is equally one of the other, you know, the other three sugyas, that they're basically assuming either that if that's true, it doesn't make a difference, or that it's just not true, that we're talking about a skybus. But that certainly isn't binding for a group of other Rishonim, and that would certainly help explain the discrepancy. So whether it's the discrepancy of what you need for a skybus or how you define, you know, the point of no return in terms of a gemar din, in terms of, you know, what we were talking about before, you know, the three gemar dins of the Gemara, you know, tzeitain, chayiv atalitain, you know, ploni atazakai, or even earlier, shifting directions by saying, you know what, I'm patur, but you can take a shuas nirvanota. Or, you know, I'm entitled, you know, to kosher edim and kosher dayanim, right? But, you know, I'm willing to be flexible. Or, I'm entitled to a shuah daraisa, but I'm going to convert it into, you know, into mumma. In that case, or in the shomrim case. Or maybe there's a difference between shoal and socher, again, and shomer kinim and shomer sachar, etc. So all I'm saying is that would be another way in which we, each of these questions would be parallel, but we might be able to navigate the evidence or not assume, like the Bali Tosis, that it is exactly identically one second. Josh.
Not to have a discussion, so couldn't you, in both directions, be machalik between mitoch, where your option's cut off because of some legal precedent?
As what do you mean, legal precedent?
The fact that you're chashid, as opposed to here, where it's...
But that's not legal precedent. I mean, your past history.
Right.
Yeah.
As opposed to here, where it's really volitional and in response to, like...
No, 100%. 100%. I'm only trying to... 1,000%. That's why I mentioned...
I'm not asking. Yeah.
No, I'm only invoking mitoch. Maybe that's why Yitzi was, you know, reticent to say those words. Because I don't mean it literal. Of course you could be mechalek. And by saying, oh, it depends whether it's a reis or a knasto reisa or you know, one of the three, you know, in descending order, you know, kinds of substitutes, you know, for mamon, I was already indicating that as well. Meaning, I'm only using bitoch to try to reflect that in the Rishonim, there's ample evidence that there's a debate about how big a gap, and therefore there is between Mammon and Shua, and therefore how, by extension, how big a chiddush is it when somebody says, you know what, I'm going to pay you instead of being nishba. How much is he putting himself on the limb or not? I'm saying the sugya of mitoch, with all the qualifications, as understood, you know, according to certain positions, reflects that question. And as such, you know, might be relevant if we're talking about, you know, the idea that, well, you can make it ischaimus without a kinyan, right, as long as it isn't very radical, either in terms of asmachta or the power to make the ischaimus itself, or if it isn't ischaimus of mammon, but it's ischaimus, you know, to a different process or to a different, you know, methodology, a different dayanim, you know, a different, you know, stage of gemar din, a different method of birur, Right? I'm invoking it for them. I'm not suggesting that, you know, it's totally Chalpa HaTal. Khalil.
Just also, because part of my point is that our case, I think, is in the middle of the Rambam's Piras Chayvus and like a case like Mitoch, because you're not really ready.
Right, I mean, because a case of but all you're really saying then is that, you know, if you were to look at Mitoch according to a certain perspective, it would be irrelevant here, because there's no Knas Doraisa, or what you called, you know, like a previous precedent, which really means like a back history of this person's. You don't have any of that. You know, and therefore, you know, it's closer to the Rambam, let's say, than Mitoch is. But that's because you're accentuating in that argument the perspectives on Mitoch that make it into a narrower thing.
I'm also accentuating the fact that Rebbe keeps mentioning this case as a case where you're basically saying, Arani Mishale.
Right.
But what's really true is you're not saying that.
No.
You're just saying, I don't want to take the Shua. And okay. Like, you're willing to accept the consequences. I think that's very different than like being mechayev yourself mamon and saying, I owe money to. It's not
By saying any nijba, you are agreeing.
You're not mechayev yourself mamon. You're just cutting yourself off the option to take the Shua. And mamela you're chayev.
Okay. Right, and I'm saying how mimela or that is, and how, you know, mechudat, like, are you now getting penalized for that, you know, and like we're creating a chiyuv because you refuse to, you know, follow protocol, or you're just like, you know, you're substituting, two practically identical mimela, you're substituting, a practically identical commodity. You know, that depends on this question, and that should figure into whether or not the level of Kiddush that we're talking about is comparable or not comparable to the Rambam. I'm saying, at the end of the day, I don't think it really. I agree with you.
I'm just pinning it down. I'm just saying,
right.
Like, it's like.
I understand. Yeah.
Okay,
good.
That's
just the Rambam compares also that if the Mashpia says that I'm not going to be Mashpia, there also the other guy is fucked right away.
I mean, if the other guy says, I'm not going to be Nijba, that's a case that we're dealing with. If the other guy says, I'm not going to be Mashbia, that's also done.
Yeah.
So again, that works easier, better, if Mashbia, you know, is you know, Hafez Taitel Shabbala Bayis. So what kind of, exactly, yeah, that's correct. But that's because, you know, if I'm not going to be demanding Hafasas Das, you know, then that's not such a ayayay. On the other hand, if I think Shua is a serious commodity, which the Rambam in other places, Shua Daraisa, does seem, to then that is being mochel, a pretty big deal. Right? I mean, mostly we saw that the Rambam really thinks Shua is a pretty serious commodity in our travels. Naska and all that stuff. But I agree with you. Dropping the requirement of Shua and refusing to be Nijba and therefore being obligated to pay are two sides of that coin, I think. I think they're connected, but yeah, 100%. Yeah?
So just wanted to point out that from the gap between Shmuel and Mamon perspective, so yeah. Rashi emerges very much in Pasa, because Yidachad and Askarab Abba,
right.
He was very committed to Shmuel being like Mamon.
Correct.
And here he's saying that the Kiyot is immediate.
Yeah, very good. Yeah, I think that does work. And Balintosis less so, in general.
And Aska, they were.
Right, and Naska, they don't so much go. I mean, it depends which ones, Riva and so on. Some of them do, and some of them don't. Right, some of them have the other way of reading Naska, that with the that it's really a, you know, a din of Psal Gabra. You know, they don't so much go for the Rashi and Rashbam. Again, some do the Rivam, but of, you know, it being either an alternative Chiyuv or a Patur, you know, therefore also requiring going for the jugular. You know, is the only way to deny an Eid Echad. Right, so I agree with you. I think Rashi and the Rashbam, and therefore maybe that helps here. I agree. Yeah.
Just also, just in the way that Tosfos reads Rashi.
Yeah.
So I wasn't sure the way Rebbe was presenting it, but it seemed like when they made the point about Gemara Din, they didn't think that was an additional reading of Rashi. They thought it was consistent with what he said earlier.
About Yatzam Yibezdin?
Yeah. So and also if you look at Tosfos and Hava Metzia.
Yeah.
So they say, the way they say for Rashi, it says Lo Kifrish Rashi Shaputrin Osel with Fi Shein Yachol Lazar.
Right.
So I think that I thought maybe this, I don't know if this is too foolish, but I thought the way that they were reading Rashi was a Shelo Yachzor go, not so that you won't be closing, and therefore you want to get him out of bed. but Ein Mashin Kan, meaning like...
There's no point, because he can't. Can. Even now.
Right, even before.
Oh. That, I mean, not like the Tosis in... I mean, not like Ramban that says it's Asuk and Balsuin.
Yeah, it's not about Yitzhi Amidazdin. It's all about the Gemara.
I mean, even earlier.
Once, I mean,
but doesn't that... And that works out... Tosis. But doesn't... He said, Pishkun Shelo Yachzer Bo Kodem Shi Yitzhi.
Right, but the point is that Shelo Yachzer Bo Kodem Shi Yitzhi.
I think in Rashi you may be right. But does it sound that way to you in that first line that Tosis? Do you want to say that in that?
If I only had the first line of Tosis, I wouldn't have said that. But,
yeah.
But then later, when they make the point about Gemara,
about Gemara Din,
they don't seem to be saying, oh, this is an additional reading of Rashi. It seems like it's consistent
right.
with what we said earlier.
I hear. So if you look at Tosis in different places, you know, I'm just saying you do get different impressions about how they're reading Rashi.
At least in Bava Metzia, if you read Rashi, if you read Tosis and Shuas this way, then it's consistent with Tosis.
Right, I hear. Okay. So again, what comes out is... you're saying even the Gemara Din thing isn't Gemara Din.
Well, it would be a Gemara Din point, but it's not Yitzhi Amidazim.
But it has nothing to do with Yitzhi Amidazim per se. And again, Rashi doesn't say Yitzhi Amidazim. I hear. Okay, I'm not sure. I'm not sure about that.
Rashi is often quoted by others as Misha Kibel Allah.
Yeah, it's Haivus.
Once he's with Haftim.
Right.
Even
yeah, yeah, like you're saying what you were saying.
Yeah.
Yeah. So again, how I think that's an interesting question. How early. You know it is, and you know is that because the Kabbalah is a Gemara Din, or because again you don't need a Gemara Din? No. Maybe it is a Gemara Din. That's also a possibility. But these are some of the I think you know, understanding Rashi, like in Ramban and others, all figures in to this question. I have to stop because I promised I would do something. I just want to make another couple of just want to speak about the Ramban and Bavasra just very very quickly next time, and also if you got a chance the Ramban and Shavuos here Lamed Tes and Aleph Simin Yud Ches and Simin Yud Ches. Then I want to speak about Geirus for a couple of minutes, just this Shakla Vataria, and then I want to speak about Lashon HaKodesh Kol Lashon, and then we'll start speaking a little bit about Rav Shmuel, and then maybe we'll talk about Ma Bein Shua D'Oraisa Shua D'Rabbanan and Mishtaba Livlo Pratika. Okay, so that's the order of the next we have a few weeks, right?
We have next week, the week after for sure, and then I guess
and maybe even the week after, we'll see who's around. Okay, so well, I'll try to get normally we would take more time and go into more detail, but you know, since we don't have so much time, we just to get a sense of some of the topics, so we will do it this way. Okay, so that's the
we're keeping 10:30 for next week also.
I think so. I'll let you know if not. Okay. Is it okay?
Yeah, it's been. I think
is it okay for everybody?
Great.
Pretty much. If it's okay, so let's try to keep it that way. Yeah. Okay. Great. If we have to, you know, change it, I'll let you know. I'm just gonna run. Oh yeah. Thanks. Thank you. Oh, I didn't really.
What do you know you were doing?
Oh, okay. Great.